From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, the season premiere this week of Fox TV's hit drama 24 didn't take long to grab fans by the jugular.
America has been victimized again. Last night's terrorist attack in San Antonio is now the latest in this series of bombings that began 11 weeks ago in 10 different cities. Over 900 people have been killed thus far, and while no one is claiming responsibility for this wave of death, evidence points to Islamic militants.
It's 6 a.m. A minute later, a suicide attack hits a Los Angeles bus. 4 frightening roller coaster hours later, another explosion rocks L.A. Only this time it's the big one, in a suitcase, after a frantic, failed attempt to stop the mushroom cloud. Six seasons now into Fox 24's TV's vigilante federal agent Jack Bauer is still going strong. This hour on point, Fox TV's anti-terror action drama 24, and where one show's war on terror is driving the national imagination. You can join the conversation. What's the big message in 24? What's it telling you about the country, about how to handle terror and fear? Is this America's future or just a white-knuckle thrill ride? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Later this hour, we'll be joined by the show's executive producer, Howard Gordon. But first, we're joined from New York by Time magazine media critic Jane Poniewozik. He wrote about Jack Bauer and 24 in a column this week headlined "The Evolution of TV's Tough Guy." He hasn't missed an episode of the show since it went on the air 5 years and more ago now, just 2 months after 9/11. James Poniewozik, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So you're diving in here, looking at the big message of 24. Conservatives have embraced it, and we'll hear some of that. Liberals have been sort of off the charts, upset at concentration camps and all the rest. Is this season going to settle that? Is it getting murkier out there, James?
Oh, I think it's definitely getting murky. I mean, I think that the nature and the ambition of 24 is to generate excitement and to push buttons. And although I think liberals have gotten upset with the show, understandably, for some of its depictions of things like the free and easy use of torture in ticking time bomb situations, I think actually that when you take a look at the six season history of the show now, it's often pushed as many buttons on the other side. For instance, the concentration camps that you look at in this season that we've seen going on, or detention centers, whatever
already,
yes,
calling
them. That's actually something that's been presented as on the show as a disturbing development that's being pushed by a kind of shady attorney general of the United States, who is intent on, you know, quote, basically tearing up the Constitution in response to terror attacks. So while you do have some very familiar, you know, conservative tropes with regard to the war on terrorism, that, I would argue is just demonstrably a sort of well-worn liberal trope dealing with entertainment about terrorism that goes back to shows like, or movies like Ed Zwick's Siege, that came out just a couple years before 9/11.
James, we're going to hear a lot of the show in this hour. We want to look at the message as well. We want a sense of how it's being received, celebrated, a lot of people riveted to it. You open your column with a reference to a get-together last summer at the Conservative Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., where some of the top security officials in the country, including Secretary Chertoff, were on hand, as well as some of the cast of 24. The host was Rush Limbaugh. Let's listen in on that. Clarence Thomas was there in the front row or thereabouts. Here's Rush Limbaugh at the Heritage Foundation praising 24 as the best show on television.
I am literally in awe of the creativity of the brains behind the program. The plot twists in one episode are more than you will have in most series in a whole season. Yet they don't exhaust themselves. This is a program you expend energy watching. This is not something that you veg and are doing passively while something else is going on in the house. You can't do that and follow it.
There's Rush after planting a huge kiss on the show's Chloe at the Heritage Foundation. He went on then to say, and we'll listen. He said, Vice President Cheney, former Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, and many others in the government are huge fans of the show. Here he is introducing and praising the cast members and producers of 24.
24 just had its highest audience ratings ever. The series continues to improve. It continues to fascinate people. It continues to reach people from all demographics. And it's a thrill to know these people and to learn from them. Some of the most creative people, and most of them are conservative.
Yes, you can applaud that.
There are a couple on the staff, I'm not going to name names, who have bought into the human beings are causing global warming hoax. But we're working on them. They're just fabulous people. I'd like to bring the panel out now so we can get started with all of this.
Okay. There's Rush Limbaugh last summer at the Heritage Foundation. James Poniewozik, it's just television after all. But there you've got some top American officials and a big figure in sort of the polemics of America right on top of this. What gets conservatives so excited about this show?
You know, I think for one thing, if you have a very popular entertainment that is at least tangentially about an issue that's, you know, very important to America and very important to your administration and your party or whatever, you want to lay claim to it. You know, I certainly can understand Rush Limbaugh, you know, Dick Cheney and so forth being fans of the show and in a way, you know, wanting to kind of capture some reflective glory from its portrayal of, you know, extreme efficiency and protectiveness and righteousness in the person of Jack Bauer, because, you know, every season in 24 hours, you know, Jack Bauer, you know, nabs an extremely dangerous terrorist who's going to kill up to millions of people. We get Jose Padilla, I think it's only natural that you're going to want to, you know, associate yourself with something like that. And I also think that there's sort of a, you know, polemical reason for that, which is that one thing that you hear conservatives say and write and blog about the show is that, you know, this is a show that reminds people that terrorism is important. And that, you know, there's a real threat and that we need to wake up and remember it. And, you know, I think that's not atypical political rhetoric. If you're a conservative, you would like to frame the debate as being, well, we conservatives think that terrorism is very important and liberals don't. I'm sure that, you know, Rush just likes the show in one way because it's a very exciting show and, you know, he has good taste. But also, you know, I think that there's a little bit of you know, posturing and trying to capture reflective glory going on there.
Trying to own it a little bit. And at the same time, as you write and many point out, this season it just gets murkier. Let's listen to just a little bit from this season, and I want to talk about it with you, where we're headed this time. Here's a scene where the president's sister, Sandra, who's an attorney, has deleted personnel files that have been requested by the FBI. She's talking with her brother, the president, from the provisional detention facility, looks like a concentration camp, where she's being held, as he tells her that he's ordered her release.
I don't want to be released, Wayne. I want to fight this. Bring attention to the civil liberties that your administration has allowed to be violated.
Do you have any idea what's going on today?
Of course I do.
Innocent people are dying all over the country.
And you choose now to make a civil rights case out of this.
Well, somebody has to. Look, if you're gonna release anybody, you should be Waleed.
Waleed is the head of the organization under investigation. Now, the FBI just wants to hold him until it can be determined what was in those files you deleted.
There is nothing incriminating on those files.
Wayne, you have my word.
Waleed is innocent.
Then Waleed has nothing to worry about, Sandra.
And where, oh, where is Jack Bauer? James Poniewozik will have people who are absolutely stone-cold fans and others who have never watched it. Where's the show headed this season? What's the thrust?
Well, I can tell you I can tell you the storyline now. I can absolutely not tell you where the show is headed, and I'll elaborate on that a little in a second. But, you know, in the season that's going on right now, there's been a string of terror attacks going on across the country, which has thrown the country into chaos and a state of paranoia, which has resulted in these detention centers, et cetera. Jack Bauer has been liberated from prison in China, where he's been in solitary confinement for the last 2 years, and is in pursuit of a terrorist leader whom we have just learned at the end of the four-hour premiere is in possession of five suitcase nukes, one of which goes off in a suburb of Los Angeles at the end of the fourth hour, and you know, we close on the mushroom cloud. Now, why I can't tell you where the show is going this season is that one thing that 24 is famous for is reversals upon reversals upon reversals. I mean, there's really only a few people in the show who you truly know their moral status and where their allegiances lie. Jack Bauer and, you know, a couple of his friends. But as we've seen in seasons before, people who seem good now could turn out to be bad later. People who seem to be bad now could turn out to be good guys later. And this is why I think it's really hard to make a claim for the show as, you know, making a sort of partisan ideological argument on any side of the fence, because in fact its ideology is basically paranoia, which is to say that, you know, nobody could be trusted. The president's good this episode, but he could be in cahoot with terrorists the next episode. And somebody who seems like a terrorist could be an undercover agent next episode. The show can and does turn on a dime because, you know, it's a network show that needs to keep you tuning in week after week and commercial break after commercial break.
It's dark, it's murky, it's violent as can be. The mushroom cloud went up in the premiere this year. James Poniewozik at Time Magazine, please stand by. Listeners, we're talking about Fox's anti-terror action drama 24. What do you see? What's the message, the bottom line message in 24? Are you hooked on this, on Jack Bauer, on the guns and dark and danger and the hyperdrama? Is this the future or is this just Hollywood ratings? We're at 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Fox TV's anti-terror action drama 24 and where one show's war on terror is turning the nation's imagination. James Poniewozik is with us from Time Magazine. We'll have the executive producer of 24 with us, Howard Gordon, on later in the show. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Has 24 got its claws into you, and why? How do you explain the 24 addiction to non-fans, non-watchers, and what's the big message here in 24? What's it telling you, the country, about how to handle terror? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Season premiere, Jack Bauer takes a chunk out of somebody's neck with his teeth. The bomb, the nuke goes up in the suburbs of Los Angeles. There are four more out there. Concentration camps, detention centers being put together. Let's listen to a clip here from the Oval Office. Special advisor to the president, Thomas Lennox, that's Peter McNichol, was the little guy in Ally McBeal, arguing with national security advisor Karen Hayes, not Hughes, about the creation of detention facilities to lock up Muslims.
Our country is under siege. Now, you're the national security advisor, Karen. Frankly, I'm surprised by your resistance.
These places that you keep building, they're nothing more than concentration camps.
Detention facilities. And the criteria for determining who shall be detained are very reasonable.
Reasonable. This revised plan of yours justifies locking up every American who prays towards Mecca.
That's a ridiculous exaggeration, and you know it.
Right now, the American Muslim community is our greatest asset. They have provided law enforcement with hundreds of tips, and not a single member of that community has been implicated in these attacks.
So far, Mr. President, the people are losing faith in our ability to protect them. We've got to do something about this now.
And locking up more Muslims will not make them safer.
No, Karen. But it will make them feel safer.
Oval Office debate from 24 there with actors Peter McNichol and Jane Atkinson, and the tick, tick, tick goes on. James Poniewozik is with us from Time Magazine. And right now from Providence, Rhode Island and Brown University, we're joined by Tricia Rose. She's a pop culture commentator, a self-described huge fan of 24, professor of Africana Studies at Brown. She co-edited Fiends, Youth Music and Youth Culture. Tricia Rose, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hi, good to be here.
So you're a super fan. What keeps you coming back?
Well, I think that we really have to remember that much of this is about the excitement of the storytelling, the extraordinary use of high-tech gadgets, the ways that the plots twist and turn. It's just an incredibly dramatic, exciting show. And it's not unlike many crime military police type shows where they have a fundamentally conservative undertone. I don't mean here conservative as left and right. I mean when you have a protectionist narrative, when you have a group of people who are constantly in need of being protected from some outside force, the idea is to heighten anxiety about that. So all crime dramas have a fundamentally this kind of self-protectionist trajectory. Of course, the terrorist context only exacerbates that in this show.
But do you see this, Tricia Rose, as an invitation to Americans to see sort of through a glass darkly here the future of the country on this screen? Is that part of the appeal? My gosh, this is where we're going. We're presaging our own future.
Well, not exactly, but I do think that the real problem is not that the show is portending what will happen politically, but that our political culture is so bereft of serious, reflective engagement that we look to pop culture to engage these huge issues. So our political culture is what's immature. It's actually too much like a pop TV show. And that's really where the problem is. And I think when we start getting anxious about popular culture, which is always contradictory, it's always going to be pulling strands from many places, then we misunderstand where we need to be attending to, really, which is why is our political culture and our White House constructing parts of the world as evildoers and an axis of evil and producing, you know, cartoonish oppositions between right and wrong and good and bad. That's really, to me, where the critique ought to be. And the idea that others want to claim the show for one political trajectory is just really, you know, ideological, you know, machinery. It's not real.
But James, here we are. This is, if it's a cartoon, 24, it's an awfully gripping one, but it's one that comes after 9/11, do you put Jack Bauer in the kind of line of descent from Rambo and Charles Bronson and the rest, or is there a different flavor because the country's been hit in the interim in a different way?
Well, I think he shares some similarities with figures like that, but I would say, you know, difference between him and Rambo, actually, and this is just partly due to the fact that Kiefer Sutherland is quite a good actor in the role, is that even though he's this tremendously competent, honorable agent who, you know, always gets the bad guy in the end one way or another, he's also a very emotional figure. And actually, over the course of the series, you can see that there have been real consequences to him for the things that he's experienced, that he's had to do. He's seen his wife killed. He's had relationships broken up. He's been tortured. He's tortured innocent people. He's been forced to kill innocent people to save larger groups of people. And by this season, he seems almost like a half broken man from this. So, you know, I do think that there's a type, and I don't want to overstate this, type of vulnerability to him that you don't always see in the classic, loner hero of action shows and action movies like this. But, you know, I do think that there's a sort of, you know, wish fulfillment in him and in the show generally. That, you know, he and the rest of the CTU represent this kind of reassuring image of hyper-competence.
This is the CTU based in L.A. in the show, the sort of adjunct to the CIA and FBI fighting terrorism from Los Angeles somewhere.
The fictional counterterrorism agency, right, that he works for. Because, you know, as we all know, L.A. is the single hotbed of world terrorism. If there's a bad guy plotting something, they can hack into his cell phone or his laptop within 5 minutes. And can track them down, you know, notwithstanding LA traffic, before the end of an hour of programming. And interestingly, I also think that the show, portrays a kind of strange, fantasy of hypercompetence on the part of terrorists. The terrorists on the show are always scheming, brilliant supervillains who have, every eventuality planned down to a T and who have feints within feints and plots within plots. And, you know, in fact, looking at, you know, many of terrorists whose stories have been told in real life and people that, terrorist investigators have picked up, they're often bumbling, as often are the people who are chasing them.
Let's listen to a little more of that meeting at the Heritage Foundation last summer, where we had Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff, several government officials there, Clarence Thomas there, in addition to some of the cast of 24. Chertoff saying, nodding to some real echoes in 24.
whether it's the president in the show or Jack Bauer or the other characters, they're always trying to make the best choice with a series of bad options, where there is no clear magic bullet to solve the problem, and you have to weigh the costs and benefits of a series of unpalatable alternatives. And I think people are attracted to that because, frankly, it reflects real life. That is what we do every day. That is what we do in the government. That's what we do in private life when we evaluate risks.
Reflects real life? Does it really? Let's take a call from Nashville, Tennessee. Port is on the line. Hi, Port. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate your show. Every time in my busy life I get to hear it. When we, after 9/11, I kept thinking it's obvious we're going to the Middle East war. And I grew up just below the draft age to go to Vietnam, and my vivid memory of napalm and, you know, fire and this sort of thing sticks with me to this day. I see the news on Baghdad and bombings and this sort of thing. And after 9/11, I kept thinking to myself, we're going to go do another war, but we're not going to take the steps here in our own country to secure our borders, secure our planes. And there were people out of work capable of doing this in our infrastructure, and we opted for war and the hysteria to lead up to it. And I think that we missed a very great opportunity to another piece of the puzzle should have been taken care of.
But, Port, are you saying that you wish for 24-style security at home? Chertoff says there it may reflect reality, but I've never seen a intelligence center, or can't imagine one working quite like the one on 24. Are you wishing for Jack Bauer's on the streets of the U.S. now?
No, I'm not. I'm wanting a balance between where we spend our money to instead of fanning the flames over there, diplomacy, taking care of our own borders, working this sort of thing out, as opposed to rushing into a war that gets us into this mess.
Indeed. Yeah. Port, we've got it, and I appreciate that. I want to get one more call here from Panama City, Florida, if I may. Glenn. Hi, Glenn. You're on the air.
Yeah, Tom, thank you. Sure. Always appreciate your show. I wanted to say this. I also appreciate you not having a show like Sean Hannity where everyone says, hey, you're a great American, and then, hey, you're a great American, too.
Glenn, I don't doubt you're a great American. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking this. All of this stuff is fear scripting for the new world order, this people's desire to say, hey, I want to be searched and biochipped, and I want all the surveillance. And I think it's a big smokescreen. The smokescreen is for what? We're softening up the public, or I'm not, but the government is softening up the public for a nuking in Iran.
So fear scripting for the new world order. There's a jaundiced eye on 24. Glenn, thanks for your call from Panama City. Tricia Rose, I hear you there, but I want to invite one more voice in first, if I may, from Washington. We're joined by Tim Carney. He's a contributing editor to the National Review Online and Human Events Magazine. He was at last June's forum at the Heritage Foundation, wrote about it. Tim Carney, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. You're a great American. I'm glad to be on your show.
And you, sir. But what about it, Tim? How do you describe what has all the joy juice running at the Heritage Foundation when it comes to 24?
Well, I think part of what you said in the beginning of the show is correct. This is a show that people love, and so conservatives will want to take credit for it. The other part is also that we do fear this is the way we're going. There might be an 11-week stretch with 10 cities being hit by terrorists at some point in the future. But the other thing that I think is very important that people see in this show, especially if you watch this four episodes of this season and in the previous episodes, is how it speaks to regular Americans being critical for our security. In other words, Jack Bauer doesn't follow Michael Chertoff's orders. This isn't about the government keeping us safe all the time. The government has incredible tools in this show, and they do a lot of work. But at the end of the day, the only guy who could have kept that nuclear weapon from going off was that guy Ray, who turned out to be a wuss and didn't do the trick.
This is the neighbor across the street who ends up in the heart of darkness and can't stop the bomb.
And if you look at the two terrorist attacks that we've stopped in progress since September 11th started, was Flight 93 on September 11th, regular Americans, and the Richard Reed shoe bomber, which were passengers and a steward on the plane. So the Jack Bauer character being an everyman a very impressive everyman. But in Everyman, I think that's part of what speaks to people in this show.
Tricia Rose, what about the Everyman piece here? I mean, the regular American's part can cut two ways. In the premiere this year, there's a number of moments where you have essentially kind of white vigilantism kicking in, people beating on the door of a Middle Eastern family in a neighborhood of L.A., ready to just beat the tar out of them. Their neighbors, thinking that they're innocent, rushing to protect them, they turn out to be terrorists. The vigilantes turn out to be kind of affirmed in their suspicion.
Actually, the whole family doesn't turn out to be terrorists. The son turns out to be implicated in terrorism, but from what we know so far, the father and the rest of the family knows nothing about it. So it's not a blanket issue. I mean, I think that the bigger issue here is that, you know, some people could get all riled up and think, yeah, it's going to be me. I can stop terrorism and have a kind of misguided form of patriotism that gets fused with, you know, acting in these ways. But I really think, I'm hoping that many viewers are actually looking and saying, you know what, this is an example of what happens when utter fear and anxiety and a certain kind of nationalism overrides a whole lot of complex thinking, which we now still have an opportunity to do. In other words, yes, we've had September 11th, but we haven't had all of these other fantasies of hysterical invasion, which is a long-standing history in the U.S., to close our borders for fears that the other people, whoever they happen to be, almost always, actually always, people of color and not white people, you know, bringing them, keeping them at the edge will protect us. So this is a long-standing pattern. We have an opportunity with this show. Liberals and left-wing people should embrace this show as a way of talking about how inept, anxious, fear-based governing with non-emphasis on diplomacy, with, you know, a lack of serious attention to Middle Eastern culture and politics is why we're in the situation we're in, partly, not entirely, and that this is an opportunity. I mean, it's, at the same time, it's a high-adrenaline, exciting show with great gadgets, lots of gunfire, which is also an American tradition, regardless of whether or not it's left or right-wing politics.
And a kind of War of the Worlds quality here, you can imagine that being pulled off in this guise these days. Let's listen a little bit here as a young Arab man, Ahmed, has just seen his father arrested by the FBI, presumably going off to one of the detention centers. His neighbor, Stan, has just chased him into his house and is threatening him. Ahmed's neighbors across the way, Jillian and Ray Wallace, witnessed the events unfold with their son, Scott, from their home across the street.
Ahmed, what are you doing? Hey, why are you running?
I just want to talk to you, okay?
Ahmed, get out here!
That guy down the block, that contractor, Stan something.
Yeah, I know. I'll call the police.
Come on!
Why don't you get the hell out of my neighborhood?
What are you doing?
I'm helping Ahmed.
Your father is calling the police.
They won't do anything. Scott, stop. You're not going over there.
Dad, I'm not hiding here while Ahmed gets beat up because you're scared to do the right thing.
Scott, stay here. I'll handle it.
There we are from 24. Tim Carney, do you see Americans sort of honing their impulses for the future through the fiction of this drama?
Well, it is fiction. It is very exciting. I think a lot of people understand it's fiction. But I do think that, especially the first four episodes of the show, again, the reaction of people I've spoken to is saying, what would I have done if I were Ray and my children were threatened like that, but there were these terrorist attacks going off? And if there hadn't been any terrorist attacks yet, his cooperation with Ahmed might have been forgivable. But his going along with that, I mean, I don't think that since September 11th, any good American would have done what Ray did. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly why we saw what happened on Flight 93. After they heard that the two towers had fallen, then they knew we're not allowed to sit back. At that heritage thing you talked about, James Carafano was a heritage policy for Homeland Security expert. He said, quote, if you're waiting on someone in Washington to do something before we can start saving lives, then we're all going to die. So,
you know, this is sounding to me like an embrace of a certain kind of vigilantism, which is another American tradition. We can't rely on the government. We must protect ourselves. We should just run in and, you know, take it up. And, you know, isn't that the history of a great deal of sustained vigilantism in this country?
There's the history, but the United 93, part of the history as well. And then they both ride side by side, disconcertingly in 24, but it brings the viewers back week after week. Tim Carney, Tricia Rose, James Poniewozik of Time Magazine, please stand by. We're talking about Fox TV's 24. Listeners, you can join us. What's the message in this show? 800-423-8255 is the number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And RHR International, an executive and organizational development firm committed to integrating executives into new roles.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Fox TV's anti-terror action drama 24 and where one show's war on terror is turning the nation's imagination and understanding of national security. You can join us. What do you think? Is 24 promoting concentration camps and vigilante justice, or is it warning us against them? How does 24 shape how fans see the world? And is this the future, a warning of the future, or just a white-knuckle thrill ride? 800-423-8255 is our number, 800-423-TALK. We've been joined by James Poniewozik of Time Magazine, Tricia Rose from Brown University, Tim Carney writes for the National Review online, is with us. Let's listen to just a little more here. Here's Jack Bauer talking with his colleague Curtis, who meets a rough end in the premiere. But here he's asking, they're talking about whether they're bothered by working with Assad, a terrorist with a big history who's just turned out to be perhaps an ally.
The man's a terrorist, Jack. Responsible for taking hundreds, maybe thousands of innocent lives over the past 20 years. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
I don't know what means anything anymore, Curtis. I spent my whole life defending this country against people like Assad. And now he's trying to disarm his people, renounce terrorism. The playing field has changed.
Jack Bauer, very breathy in the face of danger. We're joined right now from Los Angeles by Howard Gordon. He's executive producer of the Emmy Award-winning drama 24. He was executive producer and writer for The X-Files, three Golden Globes there, and many Emmy nominations. Howard Gordon, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tim.
So how do you see what you're up to here? Where do you see your show turning the country's imagination when it comes to the war on terror and national security?
Well, you know, we're not trying to turn anyone's imagination anywhere. I think if anything, we're trying to bring up some issues that are certainly present and at hand here. And even before that, we're trying to tell a good story. I mean, we subordinate everything to the idea, the fact that we're a thriller and obviously want to be a compelling television show. But along the way, because the subject is counterterrorism, these things come up. And to the extent that we have a point of view, we really have none. The point of view, again, is bringing up all the issues, which are very complex, and for which there are no good answers.
Do you debate whether anything is too much, Jack Bauer taking a chunk out of his captor's neck, or more seriously, the image of a mushroom cloud over Los Angeles? Does it ever come up?
Yeah, it comes up, obviously. It's a huge debate, and I can't say that we ever know for sure whether we've stepped over some line at which point the audience will be disturbed to the point of turning off the television, or disgusted, or insulted, or compelled, but we do feel like we do have to take chances, and we felt this was a way to make this threat, I guess, a little bit more concrete than we have in the past couple of years. And I guess we felt, too, that having been on the air for 5 years prior to this, we had, earned the chance to maybe ruffle some feathers, it appears we have.
14 million viewers, that's a lot of eyeballs in addition to feathers. And what do you make of the kind of almost giddy celebration we heard earlier from Rush Limbaugh of 24, of that embrace, or from criticism from another angle? How do you look at the politics around you as a show?
I think it's a bit of a Rorschach test. I think a lot of people, the fact that the show's loved by Barbara Streisand and Rush Limbaugh, it seems, in equal parts, I think demonstrates that people take from it what they choose to, but I do dislike, and I can tell you we all dislike the idea or the thought that we're some sort of political mouthpiece for a point of view, and I think you can find ample arguments on both sides of the aisle.
James Poniewozik, at time, we've got Howard Gordon here. I'm curious what you think of the level of violence and destruction in 24. I mean, mayhem is no stranger at all to television, but this is pushing it into territory, the mushroom cloud. We don't go there often, you know, and there are four more in suitcases, we're told. Are they up against the boundaries of where they can go and have that 14 million strong audience follow them, or are Americans open to sort of any kind of gruesome mass destruction that can now be depicted? James.
Well, I should say that as a TV critic, I am extremely, extremely in favor of violence and mayhem on television. having said that,
Fills the tent.
Because it keeps my attention. One thing that I think is actually sort of interesting about what they've been doing this season. That has actually made, and I'm sure Howard would agree with this, one problem that a show like 24 runs into is that, first season is a potential assassination. Second season,
right.
There's a big, big nuclear bomb plot. Third season, bioterrorism. Fourth season, stolen nuclear cruise missile. You have to up and up and up the threat, and there becomes a point where you can't up it anymore. I actually thought it was sort of interesting that this season they kind of ratcheted it down to something that seems a little more plausible or real world. In other words, a string of suicide bombings, conventional suicide bombings. And while this is a much taller order. Not, a giant, mega, 10 megaton nuclear bomb, but suitcase nukes, which, certainly serious people have talked about floating around there, however plausible it actually is. So in a way, I think that this season has been, more chilling in a way because the threat has been dialed down and so, seems, and I don't want to overstate this, but, a little more real world. Having said that, I honestly don't think, maybe I'm being Pollyannish about this, but that, people look at 24 and think that it's the nukes.
Tricia Rose, there's the high-tech end of it with the nukes. The low-tech end is the, call it what you will, everyman intervention or vigilantism. You've got Howard Gordon, the executive producer here. What's your question for him, Tricia, about where he's steering?
Well, I'm so glad you said that because I really was wondering if I could ask him a question.
Please.
I'm a big fan of the show, and I think it's really well done. And I do think in many ways it is partially a Rorschach test. But I think one of the things I would appreciate, and it may be impossible in the format of the show, is some sense of sort of why are there all these terrorists? Because I know it's based in CTU, which means that, of course, we're already in a deep crisis. But the show is beginning for me to beg the question, and of course, I'm an intellectual, but I hope other Americans are also asking this question. Well, what's behind this? Because, it's not that simple that they're just terrorists and good governments. Both individual terrorists and governments kill innocent people all the time. So that's not really enough. There has to be something else. And I'm wondering, is the show going to, speak from or at least allow some space for that perspective? What are some of the motivations behind the hostility toward the U.S. in the Middle East?
Howard?
Well, it's interesting because everything history is definitely context, and even on the sort of on the narrative level here, Jack Bauer had gone into Beirut, is reported, and had killed one of these the terrorist's brother in an action, and so his hands are bloodstained, and he's obviously been involved in this cycle of violence. Curtis's platoon in some post-Desert Storm action was also
had two members beheaded.
Members were beheaded by Assad, the man who's now laying down his arms. So, in some ways, these two guys. There's obviously this is very reductive, and 24 is not history, but hopefully it distills some essential wish fulfillment that we have that one day these two warring parties in this cycle of violence are going to attempt some political solution to whatever differences. Whatever is causing this cycle of violence. So look, we are not clearly not a civics lesson. I think we do distill it. It is, reductive, but it is hopefully essentially true.
There are political conversations. This time you're talking about detention centers and the Constitution. The president's sister is out there saying you can't do this. You've got the civil liberties lesson going here. Is the international picture beyond personal vendetta, grudge, and personal history? Is that Is that turf that can work for you, Howard Gordon, or not?
Well, I think anecdotally that's a good point. I just hope I answered Trish's question a little bit, that there's no, we're not going, you know, it's not, it would be silly to sort of say who started it? Where did it
start?
Well,
no, I wasn't asking the who started a question, but it's more about saying, well, if we continue to have a belief that there's just literally no reason for this widespread hostility and these incredibly high-risk activities that people take to attack us, if we just see this as random insanity and religious fundamentalism only, of course, that's some of it, but there's other things going on. If we don't ask those questions...
I think the character of Assad, though, does represent that that part that you know again in his mind he's a freedom fighter. In his mind he's, I suppose, some idealized version of or sane version of Osama bin Laden and Yasser Arafat and Jerry Adams. I mean, I guess you know we conceived him as that character, as somebody who, again, from his perspective, had a legitimate political grievance. And of course, Jack Bauer is a defender of America and whatever you know. Whatever moves America might have made, or whatever foreign policy America might have executed, that had ignited that kind of hostility, we don't try to untangle it. But the consequences of it are obviously very rotten, and here's where it's come home to roost. Here's the blowback that we're dramatizing, obviously, and then we're dramatizing our response as a country to that blowback, and it's ugly, and there are no ready answers. And obviously, you know, I think any reasonable person would agree that. You know, destroying due process and ignoring the Constitution is a bad thing. By the same token, I think anyone would say sticking our heads in the sand and not attempting to address a threat that's real is also foolish. So I think the show hopefully lives in that kind of complexity.
And there's the turf we're in at the outset of this season of 24. Executive producer Howard Gordon, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Let me take a call from Fort Worth, Texas. Margaret, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I mean, I started off watching the show and continue to watch it because I felt like it was more fun than almost should be allowed by law. But an interesting thing happened. When the show first began, I had a son who was in the eighth grade, and I found that in the course of it, I began to be able to have discussions with him about things that were illegal, the differences between illegal and immoral and unethical. And I could do it without it being mom speak because
because it's cool. It's 24.
It was cool. It was 24. It was on a popular show. But you get kids that age, and everything to them is completely black and white. And here's a show where pretty much nothing is black and white. It's all in grays. And that, you know, that was an interesting thing. So maybe when they went off to a government class, they looked at things a little bit differently. And I now find that I'm able to, and this is one of the great achievements of the show, is that his younger brother is now a sophomore in high school. And I'm having the same kinds of discussions. I'm still able to do that with him. And I really embrace that the fearlessness of the show not to be simple and not to have things in black and white and not to have a protagonist that's James Bond, to have him act with the best of intentions but still make mistakes and be wrong and suffer consequences for those mistakes.
So kind of bloody civics lesson and a learning tool right there in front of the tube. Margaret, thanks for that. James Poniewozik, I know we have to let you go. How do you see 24 as a civics lesson?
Well, you know, it's a big, loud TV show, and you know, I think it can only be so much of a civics lesson, or it would probably become a very bad television show. You know, you could probably do something like that very well on, say, HBO, and about a million people would watch, and it would be very interesting to them. But I would say that one thing that it does that's really kind of useful is that it imagines things, you know, in sort of a raw and exaggerated, but at least in some ways emotionally true way, that we haven't necessarily discussed that much in, you know, 5 years of the quote-unquote war on terror.
Yeah.
You know, we talk a lot about what the government is doing now and what's going on in the world now. You don't often hear, you know, discussions, say, in the media, in the body politic about what would happen in America if there was a string of suicide bombings over 11 weeks. What freedoms would we keep and what things would we lose and what would you want to do? What would the government do? How would people react if a suitcase bomb went off in a suburb somewhere? You know, these are all questions that are, you know, very important for people to at least think about. You know, the next time there is something bad that happens, how are we going to react and you know, will the country be changed even more than it was after 9/11? And I'm not saying that, you know, everybody who watches 24 is asking those questions. Maybe some of them are just having drinking games. But to the extent that, you know, it makes you sort of, you know, gives you a catharsis and makes you think about things at all, that's not an entirely bad thing.
A pretty gripping pre-exercise. James Poniewozik, media critic for Time Magazine. You can read his column on 24, The Evolution of TV's Tough Guy, this week on his blog, Tuned In at Time.com. James, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Let me take a call from Williamsburg, Virginia, and Deborah. Hi, Deborah. You're on the air.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think the point is excellent, that as long as this TV show promotes interest, promotes conversations on the issues, it's great. The same minds that are thinking of the plots in Hollywood are the same kind of minds that might be thinking of the issues and how they can use the tools at hand to make these things happen in a terrorist situation or in our government. And I think as long as people use the information they get from the TV show to talk about the real issues in the United States and the world, I think it's great. And I don't like violence in TV, but I like the opportunity to discuss with my nieces and nephews the issues that they bring up in the TV show. So I think that's great.
Deborah, we've got it, and thank you. Tim Carney, do you see that same useful conversation, or do we
somehow
sublimate the violence, let it be there, let 24 take care of it, we don't have to?
Well, I mean, I think that violence, too much gratuitous violence, can have a negative effect. But the debate, everything that the last two callers said is absolutely correct. And the debates about negotiating with terrorists and the debate about, the Assad character, what if a Hezbollah leader wanted to come and help us find Osama bin Laden? Would we go along with it? There'd be people who said no. But the blend of pragmatism and principle that goes into any foreign policy or homeland security question, and then on a micro level into anything that Jack Bauer might have to do in a room alone with a terrorist, I think those are great debates to have, and that the show, it does what any good ethical discussion in an ethics classroom would do, take it to an extreme case and say, well, what if we remove this one condition? Then is it still fine? What if we added this? Then would it be fine?
Tricia Rose, last word goes to you. Bottom line, does 24 set the country up better or worse for a dark future that could be out there?
Well, part of it is what we do with it. You know, again, these are complicated popular cultural texts. They're always contradictory. And I think to revise and even add to James's question, the what will we do, I think, you know, if a suit bomb goes off, how will we respond? I think what we have an opportunity here is to look at the question before that, which is how can we reduce the likelihood of it going off, not just by more border control, but by altering our global policies and by really listening to the world. This isn't just about the Middle East. Other parts of the world are also asking the U.S. to alter its policy. And I think we have a chance here to talk and use this show to help us have a better conversation.
Before we're all hunkered down in the cellar, Tricia Rose, professor of Africana Studies at Brown University. Great to have you with us. Thank you very much for being with us this hour.
My pleasure.
And Tim Carney in Washington, D.C., a contributor to the National Review Online. Tim, thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You can continue this conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.